Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharakana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at speakonit.btr. Today, we are joined by our guest, Rita Fuller Yates.
Rita Fuller Yates is an acclaimed author and historian from Columbus, Ohio. Fuller Yates obtained her bachelor's degree in history from Ohio University and later her master's degree from Savannah College of Art and Design. She grew up near the east side of Columbus, Ohio, and attended Columbus's East High School, and she found herself immersed in the rich history and culture of the community that surrounded her. Early on in her life, she developed her love for family and tradition. She has focused her attention to African-American history within the various communities of Columbus, Ohio. She hosts a weekly interactive TV show called History in the Streets, where she takes her viewers on a journey to discover amazing African-American history right in their backyard. Her mission is to share historical facts and interesting topics with the community. Welcome to Speak On It, Rita.
Why, thank you for having me, ladies. Such an honor.
Thank you for being here with us. We're excited to get started and learn more about you and your work. So our first question, you know, you are a historian, specifically a local historian, but you even chose history as your major in college. So what inspired your interest in history?
Well, you know, honestly, I'm a person that likes stories. I learn through hearing stories. I'm a professor now, and now I've learned the benefit of sharing stories. So now I teach sharing stories. I think it's a memory. For me, it's more about how is it that I can educate someone based on how I learn. Right. And when I think about history, I think especially when it comes to the Black community, I believe we have our own way of learning. And I believe that history was overeducated to a place where it made us not interested, even in ourselves. Right. So then once I started recognizing the philosophy and the psychology of why it was that we was not learning our own selves, I started becoming a resource for that and making it simple. Making it easy. It shouldn't be overcomplicated to learn who your great grandmother is.
Right.
So again, just being a pillar and when I got my major, when I majored in history, I never taught history. I never was a history teacher per se.
Right.
Because it really didn't gravitate to me. You're talking about in the late 80s. Where history was American history.
Right.
And I'll say this, I've got to always go on record saying this, I wasn't big on African history. Mm-hmm. And I'll just, you know, and I have to be, as she said, I'm very, very honest and candid about myself. And now I know why. My family hasn't been, we've been free for almost 300 years.
Wow.
And so when I recognize my connection to Africa, I see why I'm so disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Although I know I'm connected. So
right.
When I started trying to teach myself, okay, if I'm like this, how many other people are this way? Let's learn more about who we are in America's space so that we can grow our confidence in that instead of forcing ourselves in something we've never,
I think that's very valid. And I think many people will relate to what you're saying. I think when you are part of the, I guess, as African Americans and, you know, those who descend from, you know, American chattel slavery, it's always been, and that's something that there's a popular YouTuber, she says that Sarah, American chattel slavery, right? And so, and I think that there's always been this split, or maybe not a split, but there's folks who maybe feel more connected to, you know, the African continent, and then there are folks who feel, you know, rooted here. And I think it's always just this dance, right, of feeling connected and maybe not always connected, and feeling connected, not always connected. And I think, you know, that's just part of our experience, you know, and that just comes with our history and, you know, what we've been through. So, I mean, thank you for sharing that and being, you know, honest and authentic with that, for sure.
Before we move on to our next question, I watched quite a few of the videos that you have on YouTube, which were excellent. And I like something that you said. You said everyone loves their own stories. And also you gave an example of a selfie and how when it comes to our history, we've been cropped out. And then my response to that was, and yes, and we're working on being cropped back in. And so I love, love, love what you're doing in Ohio in terms of history. And it's a great, great example of your local history matters. Find out what it is. Find out how you fit into that. And so with our next question, you have a great expression you use often. History you can touch. Please share with us what that means.
History you can touch is really like when we grew up learning history, there was still a month out of the year that they would touch on Black history. This wonderful month, we normally focused on five amazing Black leaders that we probably could all talk on at this very moment. Mm-hmm. I never want to discount any history because, again, it was a wonderful story and we needed to know that. But I think sometimes how education pigeonholes the Black community in limiting our Black excellence is by showcasing the minimal amount of Black contribution. And they did that from a national perspective because it made it safe. And so here it is, we learned about Martin Luther King and we learned about all of these amazing figures, but at the same time, do we really know them? Did Martin Luther King really sit down at our dinner tables and talk to us about going into high school and how it is that we can make better decisions? More than likely not. He may have had a few, but more than likely not. Honestly, who I like to honor is the principal who sat down at your dinner table. Mm-hmm. I like to honor the pastor that married you in your backyard. Right. When you could touch those stories, that really is what makes an impact in your everyday life. That's where that confidence comes in. See, I'm married to a white man. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to, and it's a real weird feeling because you're dealing with the new way of thinking in my history. Mm-hmm. And so when I married this man, I told him, when he asked to marry me or want to date me, I'm like, you do know I'm like real Black, right? Like, I'm not like suburban Black. Like, I need you to understand that because right. I don't want you to misunderstand when I'm going down this direction that I didn't know God was going to do in so amount of time, but I knew it was going to happen. I didn't want to disrespect him, you know? So I wanted to lay it out on the line, like, you know, this is what it's going to be. So I hope you understand. And it's been amazing because I've been married twice. So I got to see, I learned through experience. My first husband was a Black man, high school sweetheart, could care less about the community. Mm-hmm. Love basketball. He'll play a basketball game with you. But then I married my second husband who loves our community, does everything to help, mm-hmm. is with me right next to me, helping me with the book, selling the book, helping me with videos. He's the videographer. We're out doing stories together. So I had to learn a lot about what it means to have allies.
Right.
And the Black community has to really get better at recognizing we always had allies.
Exactly.
We know our history. We can't just paint every white person into a bad space.
Very true.
Before we move on, I want to go back to where you said you want to sit down with that principal. And that's something that when Sherikhan and I started doing the podcast, you know, we said it doesn't have to be the people that we want to talk to. You don't have to be a celebrity. You don't have to be high profile. We want the stories of average people or people who are doing the work. And so one of the things as you were speaking, I was thinking to myself, we have to capture the people and their stories now, those pastors that are older from the churches, the communities, the schools, the principals, the people who have lived in the community for a long time that know the stories. So one of the videos I was watching, you were dealing with that. You were in a community, you had your notepad and mm-hmm. you were just sharing a little bit about the history in the community and you were getting ready to speak to someone. So that's what I love and admire about the work that you're doing. Like, hey, let's get these local stories. Right. Let's get them, because if that older person who knows the entire history of that community passes away, then it's lost. The stories are lost. So I love that. I love how you're focused in your community in Ohio and you are doing it. And it's just admirable. And for Women's History Month, we celebrate you for the work that you're doing. It's amazing.
Oh, why? Thank y'all. I feel so excited. Thank y'all.
So what are some Black history highlights about Columbus, Ohio that you would want someone to know?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, again, Ohio was a free state. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the 13 colonies, we were the first state to become free. So mm-hmm. we've always been an example of what does it mean to be Black. Mm-hmm. Because being the first free state, that means we were the first free Black people. And we were an example of how the rest of the nation would process living next to Black people. So right. that's huge.
That is huge.
Because literally in 1803, we came, but in 1804 was the Ohio Black Laws that literally started prohibiting us from moving to Ohio because they didn't want the runaway slaves to just have access to Ohio. So then you had a pay a debt of $500. You had to have someone from the community approving or signing off on your existence. And you had to be approved through the courts. You had to have your papers. So it was a process that they implemented pretty quickly. And that was, again, the idea for anyone to move to Ohio was a new way of thinking. They were tired of slavery. They were exhausted from the institution of slavery. They wanted new opportunities as far as cropping. This part of the Northwest Territory would offer more agriculture opportunities to the nation, unlike what they experienced in the South. So they wanted to tap in, but they mm-hmm. knew it was at a cost to getting to know what Black people were. It was 1 year and they couldn't do it. So that's what I look at is every time they try, then there's a way to control. Right. So then Columbus became established in 1812. 1813 was the first prison system that was created in Columbus. Wow. So pay attention to, we were a free state. The Ohio law came. Then we became established in 1812. Then literally in 1813, they created the first prison system, which really allowed for free labor, because again, those runaway slaves that didn't have those papers were the ones that were imprisoned.
Right.
And at that point, they were able to use for free labor. And guess what they were doing? They were building the city.
Wow.
Wow.
Pay attention to how everything seems like for Ohio, we are an advantage because it's on paper, but then there was always something there to define us, to let us know that they're still in control.
And that's why historical timelines are so important. You have to find out what were the laws, what was taking place at the time, and then where does your family or where do your ancestors fit in? So, you know, I always give the example of loving history in high school, being so passionate about it, but then how it took on a whole different meaning when I started doing research And then I could take the historical timeline and then my family's timeline. It's in there. So that's always, always so important. You know, next is, can you share with us about your visit to the Columbus, Ohio Green Book locations? I saw that in some of your YouTube videos as well.
So again, Columbus, Ohio is unique. It was, as we talked about before, it is evolving into this major city that many people are more interested in now. But mm-hmm. I honestly have always loved Columbus. It had always had its own unique aesthetics. It has its own unique way of thinking, because again, we were a test group. The Black people here were a test group. Let's just make it plain. Mm-hmm. And I believe that our opportunity to be the example of what it means to teach other African Americans the experience of being Black excellent can almost start from Columbus, because what I teach now is the migration from the South to the North.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we call it, you know, light skin, dark skin. But that again is where that took place. You should see my great grandmothers or the aunts that are in these photos, or my friends. Everybody was damn near white. Mm. So then you had, and I remember it because I felt so different in middle school, but didn't understand why, you know? But then you've seen this flux of people moving from the South to Columbus, and the whole aesthetics changed, because now you have people moving there from the South, and the very fair skin, light skin people who have been educated for over 100 years now having to live amongst dark skinned people from the South who was never educated, and some of them couldn't read.
Mm-hmm.
So then you say, well, oh, that's where the, oh, she thinks she's better than me comes from. Because now the light-skinned people are teaching the dark-skinned people.
Mm.
And so that now I'm getting like, oh, it had nothing to do with hair.
Right. Interesting. Interesting.
That was just another way to make it easy to discount, you know, or make someone feel not valuable. But when I think about it at the soul of it, it was just a disconnect between the light skin and the dark skin, the North and the South, the educated versus the uneducated.
Right. Are there a lot of Green Book locations?
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because now I lost track. Get back on track.
You're fine.
You are good, girl. You're good, girl.
You're fine.
So, the Green Girl locations in Green Book, there were 30 years that this book was collected and shared throughout the nation. In Columbus, there was in 56, maybe 20 sites. Mm-hmm. In 52, there was over 70. And so every year in my research, I started looking for those sites, because as historians, one historian looked at one year and defined those as the sites. So every historian just thought, oh, those was the sites. It was five of them. And now we have three. Well, then when I did my own research and found out in 52, there was 70, we still have a lot of those sites. So now I'm able to go back and tell everybody, hey, preserve that building. Let's talk about this building. It was a part of the Green Book.
Right.
And here's the story and here's the proof.
I love that video about you visiting the Green Book locations, because it resonates with me, because I recently, you know, you can buy a copy of the Green Book like on Amazon at this point and or wherever. I brought it with me on a trip that I took. I took like a road trip to Pittsburgh, and I decided to just, you know, see where those Green Book locations were. And I think that's something I would like to do, you know, every time I visit another state or city. And that's a great way to bring history to life and to really connect with Black history and to see how things have changed. And like you said, I mean, it's also important too, because if we don't kind of maintain that interest, you know, these things can die out and get completely erased. So I thought that was really, really cool, a cool segment. And you know, it's available to, you know, for listeners. We'll plug your website later, and they can see, you know, for themselves, like your visit. So that was a really cool thing to see. So our next question are some ways, you know, what are some ways that other people can start to learn more about Black history in their own backyard, like you do?
So I think one of the ways is we have to, as teachers and as advocates, because that really is what I've become, more so than talking about dates, is talking about the value. And what I'm learning is because we've been manipulated to not recognize how we learn our stories, and we've learned it based on how someone else, when you say history, someone either decides to come or don't, because they already know based on their experience what it is that they want to be involved in. Most people, some people just don't like history because of how they learned it. So now I'm finding myself having to be an advocate to go back to the basics and talk to those people and get in their face about their story, because everybody's got a story. And
Right.
then once you start breaking down that they got a story, and you start
Yes.
seeing people, because as much as we have like social media today, everywhere I go, somebody wants to talk to me. And it started to offend me when I first started doing this, because I was like, damn, I mean, I want to have a good time too. Why do I gotta stop and listen to everybody's story? And I was sort of agitated with God, like, gosh, I can't even, enjoy the concert. I gotta always listen to somebody's story. And then God told me, people are hurt. No one is listening to everyday people. So everybody wants to be the star. Everybody wants to be a celebrity. But what about the people who are doing the work?
Right.
Who's in the pavement? Who's paying attention to them? Who's telling their story? And I was like, okay, well, I guess that's where I come in. So I've learned to be more humble, knowing that that's what I'm used for. People want to be heard. And this is a great time for us to stop and recognize that we can save lives by just listening to people in their story.
That is powerful. But you're chosen to do it. You're chosen
Obviously.
to do what you're doing. Before we move on to our next question, as you were speaking, I was thinking, I saw something where it said on your website, you and your researchers. Are there a lot of people that work with you doing the research?
My husband and I.
Okay. That's your team. Okay.
Yeah, I
What a
mean,
great team.
we try to pull people in, but we're so serious.
Right.
We just don't want to offend anybody and their work ethic. We had some contributing authors help with the book. But again, when we start on something, we are one, two, three. Actually, some of the people that helped was like, oh, well, you said you was gonna have a book. We sat and had a meeting in February last year, and you said, next year I'm gonna have a book. And she said, guess what happened? You had a book.
Because sometimes you can wait and sometimes you can't, and you have to go with that flow and that vibe and that energy. I've talked to a lot of people over the past couple of months, and I said, I feel like there's this, and I don't still don't know what to call it, but I feel like there's this energy that is pulling us to do certain things, and time is of the essence. And it's like, do it now. And all of the pieces are starting to come together. And, like with the question that Shara kind of just asked you about history in your own backyard, that is so important because, again, how many stories are being missed? You may be interested, you may be focused on your own family, but then what are the stories in your community? All of those stories are so important. Moving forward to our next question, what makes Columbus, Ohio special to you? And can you talk a little bit about your book, just very briefly about the book?
Yeah, I was born and raised here in Columbus, Ohio. So I've been able to see the evolution of the city. But more importantly, I grew up in the heart of a community called Bronzeville, and we're currently in the process of applying for as a national historical community. It's very unique. Many of the historical sites are still remaining. And some of the figures that helped create those communities, the legacies still remain in the community today. And I think we have an opportunity again to be the test group of what Black excellence looks like, even in the interim that it's Ohio and people wouldn't facilitate Black or think of the Black cultures specifically when it pertains to Ohio. But again, we were unique and we were building something different. And I think now after 200 years, we've become that example and we're able to now see the example through our lifestyles. And that community definitely sits still as that example. Now it's under gentrification. So the reason why I wrote the book was Columbus, Ohio, historically, when it came to Black communities, they would whitewash our stories. So it was always somewhat known. A grandmother would say, oh yeah, I used to live in, let's say the community was called Upper Arlington. Now, and they say, oh yeah, I grew up in Upper Arlington, but there's no existence of a Black community or anything that says Black people ever lived there. So what they do is before it was called gentrified, they would come in and take over the Black communities because the land was very inexpensive. And they'd buy, or I shouldn't say the land, the homes. And they'd come in and take over the homes, destroy them or whatever, rebuild on it. And then in 20 years later, you wouldn't even know. And we just go on about our lives, move on to another community and keep it moving. Well, this community I grew up and was raised in, they built the community, left it after 10, 15 years because they wanted the suburban life. We stayed in it for 100 years. Now they're coming back. It literally is so many miles, not even 2 miles from downtown. It is a golden real estate. It is, I mean, when I say I'd be damned if we give up our story. So that's I took charge of making aggressive movement of making sure that we put stake in that community.
Right.
Because it's constantly evolving. And what they did, the first thing they did, was they created a mural and they made it was a nice, beautiful mural of different Black people. The first mayor of that community was in it, but there was a picture of Abraham Lincoln in the picture, and he was the biggest figure in the picture. Well, people in the community didn't like it. They were like, look, you know, we're trying to process living next to you. I've been in this community for 100 years. Please just take it down. They were like, no, this is our community too. So I was like, okay, takeover is happening.
Game on.
Right.
We got work to do.
Yeah.
So we birthed the book, and we're making sure that people know from that community that that house that they lived in was owned by this particular Black person, because now you own it and it's $400,000. When she lived there, it was $14,000. But let me tell you about how amazing she was.
Right. Ooh, that's beautiful. That's powerful, too. And it's an honest conversation, too, about gentrification. You know, so many African-American towns and cities have been, you know, targeted for gentrification. And I don't think that it's a topic that's really explored the way it should be. I remember reading a book many, many years ago about it. And it was, you know, in the, you know, very academic kind of book, but they basically said that, you know, based on their research, when folks do gentrify, the intention is to take over. You know, like you said, the takeover was happening. There isn't some kind of aloofness about, you know, what the end game is. It's understood what the end game is. So it's really important. Yeah. And so it's really, really awesome that you took charge in that way. That, you know, we salute you for that, for sure.
Well, thank you. When my childhood home, when we sold it in 2000, we sold it for $32,000. And 2 years ago, it went up for $280,000, just to give you an idea of how that community is changing.
You have to have a vested interest in your community, no matter where you live. You have to. And go to the, you know, the community meetings, or when you see that something, or like read the paper, stay aware of what's going on in your communities. And if you see rapid change and nobody said anything to you, you better find out what's going on. I think this is important. Let me just put it this way. Somebody once said, when people can go to a function and a certain song is played and everybody knows, okay, these are the steps that we do. So I'm referring to all of the line dance, like the line dances mm-hmm, in our mm-hmm. community, right? So we know to do it. So we have to be the same way, the same passion, the instant moving about things that are happening that are going to impact our company, our communities. So we can come together for a song. You mean we can't come together to make sure that we are decimated in our own communities?
That's right.
Or can't afford to live in our own communities?
That's right.
You have to pay attention.
Well, we didn't know. Because that's, again, when I looked at it historically, because I'm like, Grandma, why did we sell it? It was a setup, you know, when they did the crack pandemic and, you know, it was all like, and if you just didn't understand the setup, you didn't know.
Yeah.
And so the goal was to get out, you know, that you didn't understand. We just didn't know. And now my goal is teaching my daughter. I mean, this is what we talk about constantly is, you know, once you know, you do better, right?
Yes. Yes.
But sometimes they was overcomplicating it intentionally, knowing that we just wasn't going to understand.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you think about it, it makes me think about my own family history too. It's like, you know, for some lines of the family, you're talking about people who for many years first were enslaved, then they were sharecroppers. They never really owned, you know, land. And then maybe like moving up north was like their first kind of shot at this. And, you know, some were able to do it successfully, but it's really not that surprising that, you know, some ended up, you know, not being so successful at being able to hold on to it. And it only takes but so much, you know, to rock your foundation, especially when you're like not so far removed from slavery. So there is a level of understanding from, you know, learning from the past, wanting to make improvements, but also kind of giving ourselves some grace, you know, like you said, they didn't know, you know, and that's
didn't know.
In South Carolina, one of the things that's occurring, people are there's a group, I forget what the name of it is now, but with these air properties. So in my family and several other families, the properties were set up as air properties and they are protected. They make sure that the taxes are paid. And I think that that's important. So, you know, if you have an air property and your family set up the property that way, to make sure that the taxes are paid and educate yourselves. And I like what you said, when we know better, we do better. We're responsible for doing better.
That's right.
I like that. I like the whole idea of thinking of something as an air property. I don't think, again, we understand that value because if you don't come from that legacy, how do you even know that that's even
exactly.
an option?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't even know. So,
yeah.
So is this some of the conversations that you all have when it pertains to genealogy or history and genealogy?
Oh, we have a number of conversations. That's why it's not one particular thing. We try to cover everything and stay focused. And it's about helping and informing people. Almost like the exact same thing of what you're doing. You're doing it on a larger scale. And that's why we admire and respect the work that you're doing and invited you to come and join us.
For sure.
Well,
for sure.
Thank you. Well, I will spend just literally about 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. What I love about the book is really it is what somebody would say, it's a picture book. Mm-hmm. And it's specifically done like that because I wanted to ensure we get it. We buy books for friends' sake, but then we won't read it. So I wanted to break down little captions. The book also has Q&As of famous Black people from Columbus. Nice. It also has a Q&A from the first African-American superintendent from Columbus, Ohio. So it breaks down everything from the famous to the everyday people, like my girlfriend, Vita. You see a picture there of her and her brother at Christmas time. So we don't want one person to feel valuable. We wanted all Black people to feel valuable. And so we collected a book of images of 200 years. And our hope is to do this because we're so hot behind the eight ball in sharing our stories and getting them online. So that's my goal, getting everything online. If you can't Google amazing Black person, then something happened. You know what I mean? So that's our goal, is when you Google Columbus and Black people, that they're popping up and their stories are available for the next generation.
Keep the name Ethan West in mind, because he's doing an amazing job as well. Elyria, Ohio. Ethan West.
Okay. I'll write him down. I'll take a visit to old Elyria.
Oh yeah, yep. He's doing something for Elyrian Black citizens and talking about their history, and it's just really illuminating. And it just goes to show like how rich our history is, and sometimes in cities and towns many of us have never heard of. And that is, you know, we salute those like you, Ethan, and all of us who are doing this work and bringing Black history to life. So can you share with our listeners some parting words of inspiration?
I would really say that learn to be intentional. I think, again, the nation is set up for us to lose, and we have so many distractions today that avoids us from those everyday connections, which avoids us from listening to people's stories, which avoids people from gaining their own confidence. I would suggest now, today, for us to find a way to be more intentional. Talk going and visiting our aunts, going back to those basics we know is in us, that we grew up with, but in this new world, which is really, again, a setup for the Black community, because we are very relational. Mm-hmm. And so if we aren't relational, sometimes it affects us internally. So they're setting that up for us not to be who we are. So we have to be more mindful of that and make sure we visit those aunts. I learned this because I just lost my favorite aunt in October.
Mm-hmm. Sorry to hear COVID. That.
Yeah. Sorry, but it was a lesson learned. Everything for me is almost like, okay, I mean, you tried to talk to me about that, but sometimes life just keeps on moving. But then here he goes, he shows up. And then you definitely learned that lesson. It's more about connecting with those that we love, spending those valuable time asking questions.
That's right.
Yes. Putting that video camera in front of them. Now we have access to that. Pulling that camera out, your phone, saying, hey, auntie, hey, I want to ask you a few questions.
That's right. Yes. That's right. That's amazing. And that's very, you know, useful, simple things that everyday people can do.
Mm-hmm.
Rita Fuller Yates, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. And you can learn more about Rita at her website, www.ritafuller-yates.com. There you can also purchase her book, which is called Columbus Black History, Images from Our Past. Additionally, you can check her out on Facebook at facebook.com/rita.yates.communityhistorian. And lastly, you can find her on the Columbus Black History page, also on Facebook. So a lot of great ways to connect with our guest today. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. We are thankful to Bernice Bennett, who hosted research at the National Archives and beyond, for entrusting us to continue her broadcast legacy through Speak On It. Thank you.